Yeah. Happy fucking, this is going to be the fucking darkest fucking happy hour ever. We're going dark. We're going deep. It's fucking Chez Pazienza of the Bob and Chez Show and just of general fucking Chez Pazienza awesomeness.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Writer. Very kind of you. Producer. Radio host with on the Bob and Chez Show. I'm just. Did you see how fucking slutty I look? Just to make Bob Seska jealous.
Can see your tits.
Is that what it is?
Right.
Really? Is
see
that
through
what...
bra, black bra under the.
Oh man, Bob, I've got
check
someone up on you right now.
Check it out,
literally
Bob. Chez is looking at my tits, Bob.
Yeah, literally up. Cock is fucking up right.
God damn, this is awesome.
Although Bob said that during your after show, you were laying in bed watching TV
with Bob,
and
yes,
he said it moved.
It did. No, Bob, and there was another man involved. I can't remember who now. Does it matter?
Wait, did
there was another man
was there
in my
another
bed?
Man?
Yes, there were two men.
Oh,
and
I think
one
it was
woman.
Craig, my fake
Craig.
Husband at the
yeah.
time.
Because Bob needs a gay sex experience more than any man I've ever met.
He looks like a Greek god.
He really does. He can't figure out the fact that I've done that. He's baffled by it. He's absolutely fucking
baffled. I'm sorry, you've done what now?
Absolutely. Oh, what? No.
Oh, that's fantastic.
No, absolutely. Like, we had this whole big... this is the first thing I'm talking about.
This
of
is the course. First
so fucking
awesome.
Thing I'm talking
wow,
about.
Wow, I thought that was
we had a conversation.
He's
had
drinking
conversation.
Bourbon. I thought it was going to be a lot more
we
bourbon.
We had a conversation
yes.
about that one time
uh-huh.
on the after party where I said, I'm like, look, whatever you can pick sexually, anything you can name that doesn't
right.
involve animals or something
right.
horrendously illegal, I've basically done. And Bob
right.
was just baffled by that.
Wow.
He just sat there like, okay, I need to understand. Like,
what?
So wait, does this mean that you like, are you like, don't fucking try to define it, dude.
And Bob's like the most liberal guy in the world. He's like, dude, what?
I'm just a hedonistic prick. Or was.
That's fantastic.
I'm not so much anymore.
Chez, that's bad news.
You're with child.
No, I know, because yeah. I was listening to the podcast the other day. And
yeah.
I have a daughter.
That, here's a guy that says fuck more than I do. And I hear, la, 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 da, 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 da. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Thankfully,
Chez procreated? What the fuck?
I know.
How old is she?
She's 7. She's
aww.
So awesome.
Yeah, she's
adorable. She's on it. It was a little like, not Pebbles was there in the mm-hmm. podcast. Because you're just doing your usual, that he Sterling Brown's the dumbest fucking moron in the world. Daddy,
yeah.
Well, like,
thankfully,
oh
I don't normally do that when she's actually in the room with
okay.
me.
All right. I couldn't tell.
No. But, I mean, she was honestly, she's terrific. She's,
what was she? She was so cute, funny. What was she saying? She kept repeating something over and over again.
Oh, well, I don't know.
What was it? She kept saying something, and you were like, that's right, honey. You were indoctrinating her.
I love that I can't even remember.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You were saying something about, she's asking who Dan Bedandi was.
Oh,
oh,
God.
And
wow,
you said,
yeah.
Oh, you said he's the dumbest man in the world, honey. You are 1,000 times smarter.
Yeah.
Even oh, she is. She
how
absolutely
old?
Is.
How
she's
old?
So much brighter than Dan Bedandi.
And what grade you said? I'm sorry.
She'll be going into second.
Second grade. Yeah.
Aw.
And she's my everything. I mean, she is. She's, aww. I can't even begin to describe it. She's everything aww. In my life. My whole, I was that guy. I was the guy who,
right.
you know, always sort of was a rage, I'm still a raging asshole. But, I mean, she just completely, when I saw her and held her, I was like, that's it. Everything is totally different.
Aww. Yeah, wow. Now, what? Since we're already like half the way through the bourbon, what is there a mama? What's happening? What's...
her mom and I, it's a really shit story, honestly. I mean, her mom and I split up.
This is when I crunch really loud food in the middle of a really personal story.
Uh-huh. I love it. Her mom and I split up. We were together for, when Inara was born, I think we were together for about 7 years. We met not long after 9/11
okay.
in New York,
oh, wow.
which, by the way, this now that makes 9/11 the second worst disaster to happen in my life
okay.
at that time.
Okay.
But she and I were together for about 7 years. You know, we got married, and things were pretty ugly. I will not say horrific things about her,
right?
But it really, really was ugly. And but I was in love with her. I mean, totally in
right.
love with her.
Right.
I was completely in love with her, and I believed in us. It wasn't just a stupid like, you know, just a really dumb love. Like, oh, whatever you say, honey. I just really believed that we had something special.
Right.
No matter how many times I've kind of got fucked over for it.
Right.
And so, you know, we had an R at one point, and I was so excited about it. I was like, this is great. You know, we've been trying so hard because we
right.
really were.
Oh,
it's
were
like,
you? Okay. So
yeah.
It,
I mean, I had, in 2006, the thing that made me start the blog that may eventually led me to Bob and everything else in my giant career.
Right, but not in a gay way if you've just tuned in.
Right.
Right, exactly. No,
because
no.
Bob, I guess, is uptight about that. Whatever. Okay. For a straight guy. Gorgeous, chiseled straight man.
I think he could have had his way with Craig.
Well, we had quite a three-way in my bed. It was really something.
If you'd taken a picture of that, I would never stop blackmailing.
It's just, actually, we were mostly just radio and bike geeking out together. We were right? Did you do the Canada? And exactly. Also, when did you start?
He's a man who cycles, who wears the outfits.
Yes, me too.
That you have to wear to cycle. Yeah. And he has the colossal, like, weirdness or nerve, whatever you want to call it, to be like, gay thing kind of confuses me.
You're like, you're a man that wears spandex everywhere, like a superhero.
Anyway, me and my wife, we had Inara, and within 6 months.
What's her name? I'm sorry. Inara. Inara? Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
We stole it. It means, it's Arabic, it means light or illuminating, and we stole it from a TV
Arabic.
Show.
All right.
Right. We stole it from...
Fucking terrorist.
I know, exactly.
You are fucking terrorist, Ches Ponzianza.
I'm totally a terrorist. I'm a sex terrorist. No, we stole it from...
Wow, this is going to be some after party.
Yeah, I'm going to isolate that and use it.
We stole it from the show Firefly, which was this show that Joss Whedon produced a long time ago, mm-hmm. and fell in love with it. Yeah, fell in love with the show.
Thumbs up from Travis.
Yep, fell in love with the show and just loved the name. And I'm like, you know what, Inara, that's a great name for a kid. But within about 6 months after Inara being born, something bad that had been happening several times in the past began happening again.
Oh, dear.
I will say no more than
that.
Okay. I understand what it is. Is it? It's because you remember Camille Grammer had
IBS,
irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
And don't be. It's not anything to be ashamed to talk about.
Exactly. Let's just say it was that.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
Okay.
So it started up again, and I'm just like, that was the point where my self respect just said, okay, it's time to take your daughter and go. And you know, and look, I mean, again, I wrote at one time about what was going on in my life and sort of how I felt.
You are a fantastic writer, by the way.
Thank you.
Can we say that before we get too liquored up and start pawing each other like animals?
I really, honestly, I very much appreciate that. But I, you know, I wrote at the time about what I was going through in terms of the divorce and in terms of what it felt like to sort of feel really, really like you put your trust in somebody and it just... It falls down on you. And
I don't have any idea what you're talking about. I have a completely magical and pristine personal life with no.
Yeah, exactly. So we're all good messes,
right?
But I had written about that. But I mean, oddly enough, in spite of even the anger that I felt at the time when it was really the worst, I won't talk bad about her. I'm not going to.
Right.
You know what?
That's classy.
Yeah, I mean, fuck it. We
made a child together. Who's
We got a great
beautiful
kid.
Muslim terrorist.
Exactly. We each screwed up, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
The fact is, I got out.
Well, there's always two people in a relationship. There's
another
one.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. I mean, I have never, ever said that I'm somehow, you know, perfect. I am the furthest thing from it, and I know that. I recognize that.
Right.
I've been through enough relationships, and I have enough people who hate me to,
fess up to that.
Okay. So, you know, I took my kid and left, and then we kind of eventually made an arrangement and, you know, shared her for a good long while. And now that she's in school and, you know, she lives down in Laguna Beach. Before, like when we first split up,
the ex lives in Laguna.
Lives in Laguna Beach.
Okay. And you live here up
I
in
live
LA.
In here. Yeah. Originally, when we split up, we were in New York. And I left and went back to Miami where my family was because I'm just like, I need help taking care of Inara, and I can't do it on my own.
I understand that from your Wikipedia entry. You were born and raised in Miami, Florida, the only child of Mickey and Ralph Pazienza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry.
And Ches is short for?
Cesare.
Okay.
Dominic Pelenza.
Okay.
Which I hate my dad.
Italian.
My dad's the best guy, but fuck. You know what really sucks? My dad has given me my entire life. He's said, I don't understand how you became such an arrogant, cocky little shit. And I'm like, you named me Cesare. What do you fucking expect from me?
Like,
how do you not...
I tried to crush your spirit in early age. How dare you be a cocky little motherfucker?
How did you not think that you could, you know, that I would not turn out to be a prick when my name is something so pretentious? You could have just named me something easy. You wanted to go Italian. It could have been Vito, Michael, any other name from The Godfather.
Right. Just check all the Godfathers. Something.
Cesare.
Yeah, exactly. Cesare, yes. My dad thought that. The only thing that's good about that is that during the times of my life where I've been sort of wanted by bill collectors, whenever they call and say, is Cesar there? No, sorry, he's not.
No, he is not. Yeah. Nope. No, he is not. Goodbye. I'm sorry, I interrupted your very touching story. So anyway, all right.
No.
Because I just was, because you are from, so you were talking about you were going to go back to Florida, but mm-hmm. So you and your daughter live here.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, she lives with her mom, but okay. We should, you know, we don't share, but, you know, I get to see her. Like, I just got to see her last week, and it's great. I mean, my attitude is whatever amount of time I get to spend with her makes me happy.
Yeah.
It does. She's awesome. She's wonderful. Yeah. She's funny and smart and a blast. And
that's what she kept saying. Who's Dan Bandini? Yeah. Who's Dan Bandini?
Yep.
Daddy, who's Dan Bandini?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's so cute. Please don't tell her because it'll just crush her faith in men forever.
Exactly. Yes, which is good. I should do that.
Oh, my God. Here's what I love.
All men are like this giant oaf.
Here's what I love. Yeah, that'll stop her from dating till she's 40. But here's what I loved about your interview with Dan Bandini is... You were so earnest. You were so really thinking. You just believed somehow, despite your ER reputation, that you could somehow have a real conversation with him. Just like, Dan. Dan.
Yeah.
But that's just not. But Dan. I was like, oh, bless his heart. That is so cute. He really somehow.
You know, I mean, no, I didn't think. I knew I would never get through with him. And we decided, Bob and I decided before we did this, that. You know, we had a little powwow, and it was, we decided very early on, we are not going to try to have a debate with him.
Right.
Because no. Because otherwise it's going to turn into Bill Nye and whatever that creationist asshole
is. Whatever that fucker is. Right.
Yeah,
and you legitimize him. Right. You said that.
Yeah. It's going to turn into that. And I don't want that because it's, you're talking about people who deal in, for the most part, logic and reason, and somebody who is completely out the fucking lunch, who has absolutely nothing good to say about anything.
Right.
He makes no sense at all.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm not going to allow that to happen. And, you know, and as we got into it, I learned that you kind of get roped in no matter what happens.
Oh, yeah.
You do.
The same thing happens with right-wing callers who call our show.
Oh, we just had one today.
Yeah. You get roped in. You can't help it.
Yeah.
But, Chaz, you could tell the real, like, sort of passion in your voice, though, as someone that has about that age daughter, when he's like a Sandy Hook denier, you're just like, you know what? Yeah, that just, you can't... Like, your sort of passion and outrage came out. Because you're like, you know what? That's just not... That's not in the bounds of debate.
That infuriated me.
Yeah, we're just sort of like, when people call and go, oh, no, you guys, you're lying. Because I only listen to Fox News and The Patriot. And we're like, what? Okay. There are not two sets of facts. And you cannot start from a proposition that Sandy Hook was a hoax. Like, you... that's not a sane person conversation.
Right. No, that's it exactly. It's, you know, there used to be before, I'm a very media-centric guy, I look at everything through that sort of prism.
Right.
And there used to be a time when if you had a disagreement with somebody who didn't hold your same political views, you all started with the same, the Venn diagram, you know, you all started with the same group of facts. And then each of you had different opinions. And guess what? That's fucking cool. That's the way life is supposed to be. But when each of you approaches an argument with completely different sets of facts, and one of your facts is completely fucking crazy and out to lunch, then no, that's it doesn't work that way. It can't be. Your facts are not, you know, opinions aren't facts.
Well, you wrote a great piece on who's our friend, Brian Fisher.
What a fucking douche.
far right nut job Brian Fisher knows why God let all those kids die at Sandy Hook. Because their God, as you kind of said, is kind of a vindictive prick, really.
Yeah.
Really?
Really? God's like, you know what?
And
I don't like this abortioning fucking knob gobbling shit, and I'm going to let some 6-year-olds take it in the face from a AK-47.
Yeah.
And Bob, you grew up with some religion, too, so you have some perspective on this, don't you?
Sure.
Oh, funny you should mention that. Here, pop that down.
All right.
Chaz Pazienza attended elementary school.
This is your life.
At Atlantic Christian School in Hialeah, Florida. Was enrolled for the 8th grade at Dade Christian School, a strict British academy.
Oh,
please proceed.
Dade Christian was really hardcore Southern like Baptist.
Evangelical.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They had the
12 years hard time Catholic school, but I don't think that's the same as that show.
No, no, it's not.
They had the they had the central casting preacher who had the swept back.
Fire and brimstone. Yeah.
What a dick.
At my sister's wedding, there was that she got married in the Southern Baptist Church, and there was a fire and brimstone preacher doing a sermon during their wedding. I'm like, is this appropriate?
I think, yeah. I think, and you know what? They will figure out a way to turn anything into an opportunity to, you gotta come over to Christ. Because you know what? You don't know whether your friend who just got married will kill that other person in his or her sleep.
Yeah.
So that.
Didn't your sister stand up and say, my brother is a godless communist knob-gobbling fag?
I like that.
Well, I had some cover because there was a transgender aunt from my brother-in-law's side of the family.
So that's the person taking all the fire. That's the human shield.
And so I was fine. I was fine.
That's the giant heathen shield standing in front
exactly.
of you.
Exactly.
No, no. The one year that I was at, and not even a full year that I was at Dade Christian, and this might have been one of the first things that really turned me off against religion, was that, because up until that point, my parents were religious, but they weren't like hardcore religious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I had a friend of mine who lived not far from me. We used to play like kickball together, like eighth grade.
Right.
And she died in a fire. Like her house caught on fire one night, she died. And she and I went to Dade Christian School together.
Right.
And the central casting preacher used that opportunity to stand up there and say, "This proves that you can die at any time. If you want to turn your life over to Christ, come up here right now." And I walked out into the whatever the lobby of the church was, and like my history teacher had to come out, and she's like, "Why are you out here?" And at the age of like 14, I'm like, "That's despicable, and you know it." And that's it. I'm like, "I gotta get the fuck out of here." People who think this way are just, that's insane. There's one thing to believe in, like there's something bigger than us out there.
Yeah.
There's something that may actually want to see us do well in the world. That's fine. But to believe that there is this vindictive cunt of a God who, you know.
No one has ever called God a cunt, even on the happy hour. Thank you so much.
Who kills people.
Yeah. That's insane.
People, you know, and his servants and use that opportunity. Right. Yeah, that's just, it's despicable.
Yeah.
And I do think that when it comes to sort of Brian Fisher, I'm very much of the opinion, probably the only thing that I will never mock is Sandy Hook. I think anybody who uses that sort of opportunistically to make some, you know, get some sort of political or cultural scalp, or God forbid the goddamn fucking pricks who believe that it never happened, fuck them. No,
but
they're
Chez, it's like they accuse us on the left of, you're politicizing. You know, it's like, really? Saying, you know, maybe we should stop 6-year-olds from getting shot in the face in school.
Yeah.
As politicizing it, as you know, as the president saying, going, this doesn't happen in any other civilized country.
Yep.
Maybe we should fucking do something about this.
And then
we're not going to do something about it after this, after 90-something percent of Americans want background checks, like to be better than they are. Like, what the fuck is going on?
I'm very aware of, like, I don't like to believe that that my political view is the default setting. I think that's arrogant. But at the same time, yes, I do kind of think that it's not a liberal or conservative or any kind of point of view to just say, look, you know what? The common denominator in all of this is that there are guns and a lot of them. And people are being killed because of this shit. And, you know, I own a gun. You know, I'm not saying get rid of every one of them, but you better make it fucking tough to get.
Yeah.
And you better really, you know, you better really make it something
I just read a piece in the LA Times yesterday. I'm going to talk about tomorrow that was talking about this whole myth of you need guns for protection. I mean, there are statistics and studies showing you are more likely to be killed by a gun, suicide, homicide, accidentally, when you have a gun in the house. It's bullshit, this whole fucking thing.
I think
about you need a gun for...
I think everybody has the fantasy. They do. I do. I have that fantasy. I have that moment where I'm like, you know what? If something really bad happened, look, I've been trained. My dad's, my dad's a cop.
I was going to bring that up.
You know,
that's next to my fun facts.
I mean, you know, if I were put in the right position, I've been trained. I'm willing to do it. I would pull my gun and I would do what needs to be done. But that's a fucking fantasy. I mean, there's a possibility it could work.
Sure.
It really
is. What's in the piece is about, you know, the presumption is like, you know, weaker people, like women, need it for protection. And they did a study on however many sexual assaults. You know how many women protected themselves with a gun? Zero. Zero were able to defend themselves with a gun. Right. I mean, mace, running away, all kinds of other things work better.
A kick in the balls.
Yeah, right, there right, you go. Right.
Yeah.
The number of times in my life where if I had a gun, I would have gotten myself into so much fucking trouble.
Oh, God, I am a spaz and a drunk.
Yep. Right? Yeah, a drunk. I would have been a drunken asshole, and I would have gotten into a fight and pulled a fucking gun on somebody, and I either would have hurt that person or, you know, and deservedly so, that person would have fucking shot me.
A friend of mine works in the military and said, the one thing you can't talk about is the number of military suicides, which is horrible, and more than combat deaths. Number one reason is access to guns, because they all have guns. But you're like, you can't even bring that up. Can't even say it. Can't even say it at the, you know, because that's like a sacred, you can't.
There are some people in the military that are trying to change that, that are trying to change the culture of, you know, not being able to talk about military suicides, because it's a complete and total epidemic.
Right. But one of the, again, not the only major factor. Right. Yeah. Access to guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were in an altered state and you don't have a second to think about it, you got a gun. Whole different thing than
exactly. You don't, you know, it's every time I write about something having to do with guns, anytime at all, I always say the same thing, which is that I have been around guns my entire life. My dad, when I was a kid, always had guns, and his attitude was to always teach me, like, look, you know what? Here, this is a gun. Empty it. Like, you know, but I just saw you empty it. Doesn't matter. Empty it. Empty it. Hold it down always. Don't ever point at anybody. Don't point at anybody unless you intend to kill that person. Kill that person. Not shoot that person. Kill. And it's like, you know, so because of that, I got a real respect for, like, you know, these things are fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But not everybody gets that lesson when they're growing up.
Yeah. And I think it's absolutely incredible that, you know, speaking to sort of what you were talking about the way the military thinks, this idea that we send these people off to war to kill, and then they come back and they're just going to be like, okay,
yeah, we're good.
Can snap, like, kind of like in the Hurt Locker, you know, we can snap back into buying cereal. We're good.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't work that way. You train these people to be killers, they're going to become killers. And that's okay. That's what they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But you better have a program in place.
And a support system of some sort.
I look at war footage. I look at even films. I look at, and I'm like, I'm surprised not everybody doesn't have PTSD. How could you possibly, as a human being, go into that and not have some form of PTSD?
Yeah. No, exactly.
And what they see is 10 times worse than what you see in a movie.
Right, right. Chaz. Mm-hmm. Chaz, sorry. Listen, I'm getting liquored up.
That's all right.
Chaz, immediately after high school, you enrolled in the University of Miami, majoring in motion pictures with a double major in psychology.
I did, yes.
Nice.
What? Then you joined the school's radio station, becoming both a DJ and a specialty radio show host. Tell us about that. What sort of specialty shows?
Look, honestly, I'll tell you something. I went to college for all the wrong reasons. Uh-huh. I went to the University of Miami because I wanted to work at the radio station. Because I grew up listening to VUM, and VUM was the only station in Miami that played, like, what is now known as alternative music. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, where the hell else am I going to hear The Cure? All right, so I'm, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to go in there.
Why? I was totally thinking The Cure when you said, yes.
There was no iTunes then. We didn't know. Right. How the fuck do you hear that?
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, you know what, screw it. I'm gonna go in there and I can play, you know, Killing Moon from Echo and the Bunnymen over and over again, no matter how many times I want.
I did that on my college radio.
Exactly, yeah. I would do the radio show just so I could make tapes of, like, everything I wanted to fucking hear.
I still have all my tapes.
So do I, absolutely.
You fucking bootlegging motherfuckers.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was why I got into it. And then I joined, instead of doing the smart thing and getting a real education, I joined a band.
That's what I saw. Alternative rock band.
Yeah. I joined a band and we played out for...
What was the name?
The name of the band, I fucking hate saying this even now. We all got shit-faced drunk one night. We've been practicing for, you know, playing with ourselves, so to speak. for a good several months, and then we got a call like, all right, you want to come and play this gig? And okay, we got to do it. And we're out drinking, like, all right, what are we going to call ourselves? You know what, fuck it, let's pick the stupidest name we can think of.
Uh-oh.
And we'll change it tomorrow morning.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we named our band after a suburb of Miami called Coral Gables.
Yeah.
Coral Gables is a stupid fucking name for a band. But we figured, all right, you know what, we'll just change it, and that show went over really well.
Uh-oh.
Like, all of a sudden, everybody at UM was like, oh, yeah, you guys are in Coral Gables. Snicker, snicker, that's a stupid name. And I was just like, all right, fuck it. What am I going to do?
Right.
So we kept the name, and we played together for, I don't know, like 3 years probably. Yeah. We did good. We did. We had a, you know, we had a song. I was, somebody sent me an article recently, which I thought was really funny, about how we apparently had the number one song at, in local radio, of 1990 or something.
Awesome.
Like shit like that.
Fantastic.
But we did, I mean, yeah, we did good and it was great. It was awesome to play. I was really, really glad.
What did
I got
you play?
I played drums.
Drums. Ooh.
Yeah. So it was, yeah, it was really, it was a lot of fun. And then we broke up and I'm like, okay, well, fuck that. Now what am I going to do? And that's
those
how I
assholes.
Got into TV.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So, and you end up being a producer at CNN, at MSNBC.
Started at SVN in Miami.
Okay.
Is,
you got Emmys, Golden Mics, all kinds of shit coming out of your ass.
Exactly.
Your fancy ass, Chez.
I do. It's very fancy. Okay. SVN is, SVN is whenever you see, like, If It Bleeds, It Leads, or you see basically the entire Fox News, like, insane.
Listen, we do
graphics.
Florida Stack
Action
every
news.
Week.
Action news.
Yeah, that's, yeah. You can trace all of that back to SVN.
Wow.
At the end of the 80s and beginning of the 90s. It was insane, and I loved every fucking second of it. It was like the whole thing was like being on cocaine from the minute you walked into the door to the minute you left. And actually, we usually were. There were more drugs in that place, and I loved every second of it.
Awesome.
But yeah, it was just, you know, you got a TV station in Miami that was just insane. It was like fucking, you know, a mile a second.
Were you number one?
We were number one. We were number one across the board.
Awesome.
Wow.
And the place is like a pirate ship. And I loved it. I fell into it. I got a gig in news because I was actually working right after the band broke up. I was working as a courier, like delivering shit around town.
Fantastic. On a bike?
Not on a bike. No. But in my car. Okay. But okay. I dropped something off one day at SVN, and I saw a little sign outside, you know, like, you know, positions we've got. Writer. I'm like, I can write.
I can do that.
And I applied, got the job, and 6 months later, I was a producer. And I'm just like, I'm a 22-year-old producer in the number 14 market, and
holy
I have
cow.
No business being here. And yeah,
did you feel it in over your head?
No.
Okay.
And that was the best part about it. I learned early on, it's like, put your hands on your hips and just stand there like you know shit, and that's good. that's how you
that
get
works.
By.
Yeah.
And that's what I've learned, and that's what I do for the rest of my life.
So, anyway, but you got to talk about the whole path. So you ended up at MSNBC. Was that before CNN?
Yeah, before CNN. Yeah, I worked at SVN, and then I worked out here at KCBS and CBS News for a little while, and eventually wound up, I keep hopscotching back and forth, I wound up back in Miami for NBC because NBC hired me.
Right.
Eventually, what wound up happening was, I was back out here again. So I literally hopscotched across the country like twice because I married somebody and they got hired back out here at NBC. And so I was, you know, working out here. And I started doing heroin.
Oh, wait a minute. Was this a second marriage? Hang on,
Chez. This is marriage number two.
Okay.
Yes. I've been married a
while. Okay, wait. We missed second marriage and heroin. Okay, let's hang on now. Okay, let's reset, everybody. Okay. So when did this happen?
I got married once when I was like 24.
Mm-hmm.
She's awesome.
Wait, was this the wife with the kid?
No. This is
wow.
So confusing. So let me try.
Wait,
let me try to draw a diagram
have now?
For you.
Just because I'm keeping track in case you run
three.
For president.
Okay.
For
three.
Three.
All right.
Three. No. Come and gone. Married somebody who I worked with about 1994, and that didn't last all that long. But oddly enough, the only person who I've been with who doesn't curse my name, so she and I are still pretty cool, which is great. After that, met somebody at NBC in Miami. We wound up moving out here. We got married. I was crazy about her, but I was an asshole and did drugs when we got out here. I was a fucking moron. I fucked everything up, and I'm the first one to admit that.
This was the heroin phase.
This was the heroin
wow.
phase. And a lot. I mean, before that,
I'm so happy
I had done
you're here to talk
load.
To us today because you are brilliant.
I did a shitload of ecstasy back in the 90s, too. Like, like literally every weekend for about 3 years. So
look at me thinking I'm all hardcore with my Chardonnay over here. Really? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's Molly now. Pardon me. Kids totally understand what they're doing. But I did drugs, too many, and finally just, like, living here, I'm like, this is going to kill me. So.
Yeah.
Went back to Miami just to get out of town. Just the idea was just to go back for, you know, a month and go into rehab, because I'm like, you know what? If I try to go into rehab out here, I'm going to leave and I'm just going to go buy heroin.
Yeah.
So get the fuck out of town and go. Went back, spent a month in rehab, and when I got out, like, my wife had left me and everything had fallen apart, and it was a disaster. And I'm like, you know what? There's nothing keeping me in LA anymore. So I just went back to my parents and, you know, cuddled up in their guest bedroom and did a whole lot of nothing. But 2 weeks later is when 9/11 happened.
Oh.
Whoa, shit. Yeah, and so, wait, that's when you went to MSNBC.
Yeah. So basically, I got out of rehab, and I was a disaster. I'd lost 30 pounds, and I looked like shit, and whole life had fallen out from under me. And you know, and I, seriously, I was in my parents' guest bedroom just going, all right, what am I going to do with my life? I have nothing. I may as well kill myself. There's no business being here. And because when you get off heroin, you can't sleep. Because when you've been feeding your body nothing but drugs, it doesn't really give a fuck about anything else.
Yeah.
So I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, and I happened to be up at, you know, four nine a.m. on September 11th, and I watched it happen, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And the most amazing thing came over me at that moment, because I'm like, I have nothing. I have nothing. I can do anything I want. I just said, you know what? I'm getting in my car and I'm driving north, and I'm going to either work for a TV network or station if they'll have me, and if not, I'm going to hand out water and help people. I've got to do something.
Wow.
You know, I've got to rebuild my life, because otherwise I'm just going to sit here. And drove up there, and before I even got there, I got a phone call from MSNBC, and a friend of mine, good friend of mine, was the EP at the time, and he's just like, come on into work. And I lived for 5 months out of a hotel room and covered 9/11, and that's how I rebuilt my life.
Wow.
Two weeks out of rehab.
So, holy fuck. And so then...
So 9/11 kind of helped you turn your life around.
9/11, you know,
And that's why you named your daughter after a terrorist, am I right?
Exactly. Exactly right.
Shit.
What?
Stephanie.
Is that wrong?
I've told people this before, and it sounds terrible, but 9/11 was, covering 9/11 was horrible. I mean, it was. You would go for hours and hours and hours working nonstop, and then you would stop and go off into a corner and cry for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you'd go...
I was working in New York then.
Yeah,
I was hosting Pure Oxygen on the Oxygen Network.
I was working in talk radio at the time, and we were on the air as 9/11 was happening. So
and then you pull your shit together and you'd go back to work.
Yeah,
and I had a woman crying in my arms because her husband had died, and I had people coming up to me for the first time in my life saying, "Can you put us on TV?" Normally, when you see us come in, you're like, "Fuck you, get away from me."
Right.
I had people thank me. That was so weird. Like, you know, thank you for what you're doing. Like, nobody thanks news people. But it was, it was an amazing experience. And the fucked up thing about it is, for me, considering where I was personally, I would not want 9/11 to happen again, obviously.
Yeah. Right.
But I will not deny that it was exhilarating and that it saved my life. That it was... I'm somebody who, I love experience and I love emotion. Mm-hmm. And... 9/11 was a million emotions at once.
Sure.
Yeah.
It was a rush.
Yeah. Everything was different. It's like the whole world was different.
No, I mean, Chess, I was there. I was driving in. I'm thinking, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be late for my pre-tape. My producer's husband calls because you couldn't get any calls. He said, turn around. Manhattan's closed. I was like,
right. Manhattan's closed.
I'm sorry, what do you mean? He's like, bridges, tunnels,
closed. Everything closed.
Yeah. And my colleagues that were already there watched the towers fall from the roof of the Oxygen building, because I couldn't get into Manhattan to even, you know, but I got back to my house in time to turn on the TV and watch the first tower fall. And, I remember driving in on the radio, because that's where we all get our shit, right? It's radio. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh, somebody was like, looks like a commuter plane has hit the World Trade Center. And I remember thinking World Trade Center. I was like, I don't think that's an accident. I don't think that's a, you know. And then, you know, it, literally live, that's how we hear shit, is on the radio.
Yep.
Someone was like, wait, oh my God, I think a second plane has hit the second building.
I watched it, I saw it happen.
And I'm in the car listening on the radio, and I thought, like, that's not...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the second plane hit, And I was, because I'm such a fucking stupid news nerd, like, I was sitting in the guest bedroom, and NBC came on, it was Today Show was on, and Lauer says, we're hearing about something happening at the World Trade Center, a breaking story, we are going to go to commercial, we'll bring it, you know, right back for you. And immediately I'm like, fucking amateur mistake, and I immediately switched over, because that's what you do.
Exactly.
You don't announce something before a break.
Right.
You know, never say breaking news because everyone will do what I just did. Yep. So I turned over to ABC. And when the fucked up thing is when the second plane hit, my first response was, like, for just a split second, I'm like, that's weird that that happens twice in one day. And
yeah.
then it hit me. I'm like, fuck, all right. And so, yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Again, by the end of the day, I was packed up. I'm like, I'm going. I'm just going to go. Like, I'm Roy Scheider. I'm not Roy Scheider.
Yeah.
I'm Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters.
No,
yeah.
Like,
I have to see this. Yeah. I have to see
no,
this.
No, I mean, and like all of us in TV, like, I got hired to be, you know, like the funny, like, fucking, it was like their, like, you know, Today Show meets The View.
Right.
And then 9/11 happened.
Yep.
And it just, you know, then the show became about death.
Yep.
Like, it's part of why I think what happened to Oxygen, what happened to our show, because it's like, it just wasn't, you know, it was a startup network that wasn't, like, prepared to do 24/7 programming, and then that happened, and it impacted every business. It impacted, like, everybody's advertisers. It impacted, you know, everything. And I thought, like, wow, like, every show, I'm the comedian. I'm here for the fucking fart jokes. I'm like, suddenly, I'm interviewing firemen's wives, and it's just crying on every show. I'm crying on every show.
And everyone was suddenly expected to be, to step up and be that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You couldn't just be like, well, this is the only, you know, this is this only thing that I do.
Right.
You know, I mean, I got, oh my God, I got into a hell of a conversation with somebody at MSNBC because they called everybody to NBC and MSNBC.
Yeah.
There. Like just
right.
any, no matter where you were, there were people there from like, you know, oh, I'm in the Mexico City Bureau. It's just me and my sister. So, yeah, I mean, and I was, you know, I'm like one of the many new people up there. And there were a couple of producers and they were bitching about like the really impossible hours, which I understand producers bitch. And it was incredibly difficult hours. But I'm just like, for the first time in my life, or at least since I first started in news and I was excited about it, I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, this is what you signed up for.
Yeah.
Before we had this happen, you had spent 3 months trying to convince everyone that they were going to be eaten by fucking sharks.
Yeah,
you were covering Gary Condit. This is real news.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up and go back to work. And as soon as I said that, I'm like, oh my God! I can't believe I just said that. Like,
oh, so you really did say that to an entire room of people? Wow!
Yeah, I just like fucking knock it off, dude.
But yeah, so that's part of your story. When you went to CNN, you got fired by CNN.
I did
because you did a blog, and that started a whole debate about expressing a personal opinion while you're working at a news network. And tell us about that because what the fuck?
You know, I mean, eventually I started working at CNN, and CNN's a great network. It is. There's so many fucking smart people there.
Mm-hmm.
There really are. And I think that's one of the reasons why now that Jon Stewart's leaving, I know a lot of people are doing these sort of retrospectives on him. And, Bill Carter wrote a really great thing for The Hollywood Reporter where he talked about the impact that Stewart had on media and the reaction that the people that he beat down, what their reaction was. So people at CNN, you know, Wolf Blitzer being constantly beat up by him and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the really interesting thing about it is that, like, somebody points out, I think in the article, if I remember correctly, somebody points out that, you know, why do you pick on CNN so much? And the answer is great. And it's the same reason why in the stuff that I write, I tend to pick on, CNN and especially NBC as a place that I worked for a very long time more than Fox. Because fuck you, Fox is a lost cause. Fox is a waste. When Fox fucks up, that's expected.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
When CNN, which to me when I first started was the gold standard of news, and NBC News, which was like when I walked down 30 Rock. Oh, I'm in 30 Rock.
That's the shit. That's
that to me, that's embarrassing. That's a disappointment when you screw up. And it just, I mean, I don't know. I feel like news can be a million times better. And, you know, I enjoyed working for CNN, and I really liked my job there. And I thought that everybody there was really, really smart. It was one of the first places, you know, there in NBC are the first places that I'd worked at in my career where A really really good test of whether or not a place is great when you work in news is if breaking news happens, you don't necessarily have to work double shifts. And that doesn't mean that you don't work your ass off.
Sure.
It just means that the next people coming in on the next shift are as good, if not better, than you. And that's good. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I worked for CNN for quite a while, both in Atlanta with and in New York.
With our friend Jackie Schechner.
Mm, with Jackie. Love Jackie to death. Absolutely. Yeah.
She's fantastic. Well, I mean, and, you know, why Jackie Schechner's not back full-time in news is another indictment of the system. I mean, I remember, my God, I shot a pilot. You remember. I shot a pilot for CNN Headline News to follow Glenn Beck's show.
Oh, lucky you.
And everybody was like, oh, my God, it tested so great. Everybody loved it. And I remember I called Monday to see what's happening. They're like, oh, the guy in charge just left for Fox News. The guy that just, like, greenlit your pilot. You know, and it's like.
Oh, Joel Cheatwood.
Yes.
Was the Cheatwood?
Yes.
Cheatwood was my news director.
Isn't he one of the smartest guys in TV?
Cheatwood was my news director at SVN. He was the guy who hired me.
Wow.
Yeah, he's one of the smartest guys I've ever
seen. He's very smart. He is. Yes. He's fucking brilliant. He's also an evil genius, but he's a very, very, very smart guy.
Yeah.
And I will always have respect for him, though, because he hired me.
Yeah. So. But I mean, and this is what happens. Like MSNBC, we were laughing because we filled in for Imus when he got fired.
Mm-hmm. Well, we took over for a few days. Yeah, when he was fired.
But the executive in charge at the time said, like, you know, even though you guys are doing great and the response is amazing, you're not going to get this because they're going to go with someone in network they already have to pay, which is Joe Scarborough. And so, like, that's how TV goes, right? And
that's
his ratings are shitty. But it's a Republican hosting 3 hours on a network that's supposed to be geared to progressives, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's, the funny thing is people who work with him are really good. Chris Licht, who used to be the executive producer of that show, is now the executive producer of CBS. I worked with, again, Small World all the way across the board. I worked with him at NBC out here. And, you know, fucking brilliant guy, very, very smart, and he'll be the first one to tell you, but totally true. but he's, I think he runs CBS This Morning now.
Okay.
And now the guy who runs, I think, all of mornings is Alex Corson, who's another guy I used to work with at CNN.
Right.
But CNN is a good network. It is. It's a smart network.
Yeah.
And I love the people there.
I was on Aaron Burnett a lot.
Yeah. It just, were you really?
Yes, I was on every day.
Because I don't watch Aaron Burnett.
And they were like, oh, it's the highest rated segment, and oh my God, everybody loves you.
Right.
And then we all said, you know, is there any chance we might get paid? Because we were on every day for months. And they were like, no.
Yeah. I stopped watching Erin Burnett after she left Chris Matthews, where you could literally watch Chris Matthews, like, his cock get hard and the little dancing hearts over his head whenever he got to talk to him.
That's a little.
He got that thrill up his leg.
Yeah, that's a little. He said. That's a little. Okay.
But I, I worked at CNN for a while, and in 2006... I started having really bad headaches, and I got a brain tumor.
Oh my God.
For fuck's sake, Chez.
It's true.
Is that in the Wikipedia?
No.
Is it not?
The heroin. I mean, the drug rehab is.
Well, that's because who gives a fuck about that? But either way, the only reason I'm saying this is because that's why I started doing the blog, because I had time off for medical leave.
Oh.
And I'm like, all right, you know.
You need an outlet.
Yeah, I'm like, my choice here is I can play, you know, Splinter Cell on Xbox for, you know, 5 months, or I can write. I'm like, oh, fuck it. Let me write. So I wrote, and I'm like, I just want to keep doing this. And then after a while, finally CNN caught on, and they were less than pleased. So,
wow. I mean, you know, because that's the whole, like, first of all, the whole myth of the liberal media, because it's not like, we were talking today about the New York Times, that some, you know, conservative wrote a piece, was like so worried his conservative friends would see it. They're like, oh, we don't read the New York Times. It's a, you know, liberal rag.
We're right.
Like, really? You have, you know, Maureen Dowd's, like, you know, burn book about Hillary Clinton every week. You have, like, Judith Miller, like, being a stenographer about the Iraq War. Really?
Right.
Like, what the fuck has happened?
No.
That you know, like, you can't have opinion, even though, like, it's not even accurate what opinion is.
Well, everything has changed a hell of a lot in just the time since I've been canned. I mean, that was 2008. That's forever ago in terms of social media. So a lot, I mean, for a while there, I was the big champion of, you know, CNN is not, doesn't understand social media, and they're, you know, they need to understand that people are going to have opinions, and this is the way it's going to be from now on. And they actually have, I think, finally sort of moved on to that and realized that, look, with social media, people are going to be expressing their opinions. Mm-hmm. There's no way around it. But at the time, right. Yeah, I got canned. But the other thing is, you know what? They fire you or they let you go if they, you know, if they don't, if they feel like they don't need you. I mean, for God's sakes, Richard Quest, the reporter, got caught with meth in his pocket and a rope around his cock,
dick.
And he's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I, by the way, good for him. I love Richard Quest. He's funny as fucking shit. But honestly, it's like he, you know, when I saw that happen, I'm just like, I wrote about it. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got fired for blogging. This guy has a rope around his penis.
Yes. Right. And he's still there.
He's still there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He was on the Malaysia flight. He's like, there's something going on here in this sector. And right. I was like, all I can think of is you had a rope on your dick.
He probably did
in Central
right
Park.
Then.
He probably did then. That's why he's so excited.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, when I say this sector, it makes the rope on my dick kind of just...
Go taut.
Right, go taut. Oh, for fuck's sake, television, Chaz. What the fuck? I
TV
mean,
blows,
really?
Man.
So
I
now
mean,
you're doing
great.
You're doing brilliant writing for Daily Banter. You're doing a brilliant podcast, Bob mm-hmm. and Chaz, on the how do you do it?
What?
How do you do it? How do you get it? Tell people how you get it.
Oh, just search for Bob and Chaz on
iTunes.
iTunes. Or Stitcher.
Because you guys talk a lot about conspiracy shit, and you had Dan Bedondi on. I was just looking at the headline today. More shots fired near Jade Helm 15 training camp. So... Yep. Some fucking yahoos were firing at U.S. troops.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because...
Did you expect any less with everything
for
that was
fuck's sake.
That was put out there about
didn't
this
Dan
thing?
Bedondi say we should... didn't he actually say we should have every weapon the military has? Really? You should have nukes, Dan Bedondi? Really? You should have nukes and fucking... Really?
It's
F-16s? Because I don't...
It's impossible to process. Like, I can't figure it out. I can't wrap my head around someone thinking that. Like, that seriously, it makes no sense.
Shall not be infringed.
Yeah. How
Shall
would you?
Be.
Thank you.
Yes.
It's like, you know what, honestly, I'm going to carry around that on like a little, like one of those little Mr. T, you know, Mr. T keychains.
Yes.
You press the button, like the kind you get over at La Luz. And I'm just going to sit there with that. Like, every once in a while, I'm just be talking to somebody, just, shall not be infringed. Oh, don't mind that. Geez. That's just,
what
that's Bedondi.
It's my ringtone. Shall not be infringed.
Right. Yeah. I almost want to become friends with Dan so that I can do that. I can set up the ringtone for him.
So, Chaz, what? Tell the girls what's happening. What is there an opening to? Because a lot of people are going to be like, "Oh, he's so hot and damaged.
Oh, for
I want to fuck him."
Sake.
And he has a dangerous past.
Yes. Oh, he's a dangerous past. He's
actually,
he's cut fucking cute and smart.
I'm with somebody. Sorry, ladies.
Really?
No, I'm. I've been seeing. It's funny because when I first came out here. Everybody was just like, you're going to be Hank Moody. You're going to, you know, you're just going to become this asshole that sleeps with everybody because you don't give a fuck and you were hurt in a bad relationship and you're just, fuck that. And I wanted to. Like, I'm going to
do that. I'm going to fucking do that.
Yeah. And then I got out here and within not even a week of being here, I met somebody who I've been friends with on all the way back to MySpace. Wow. Somebody who was a reader of the blog. And she's just like, you know, she's somebody who I'm like, you know what, she seems really cool. We're just going to go grab dinner because she's a cook and I, you know, fuck it. There's somebody really cool to take to dinner. So I'm like, yeah, you know what, we've been talking forever. Let's go have fun. And that was it. We hit it off and she's been awesome. And she really is awesome. She's great. So
how long has this been?
This has been happening since, since a week after I got out here. So we, our first date, if you want to call it that, our first meeting up was January 1st of 2012.
Aww.
And we've been together since then. If you happen to live in the LA area, she's a chef at Turin over on Beverly and occasionally at Papi over on Franklin.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Look at him sucking back that bourbon. I can tell this after party, Chris, is going to be epic.
Awesome.
So I'm glad. So great. Look, my friends are getting here now.
Your prediction of ending up naked and covered in vomit may come true.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm all for it.
Pretty sure. Pretty
that sounds
sure.
really good.
Chaz, you are a delight in a really dark, sort of interesting way.
No, but this,
that's very kind of
this
you.
Conversation has been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad. Thank you. Yeah. That makes me feel really good.
Yeah. I want to lick those dog tags around your neck. I don't know what's happening. Something is fucking up right now.
I know. I need to start dressing like somebody my age.
Chaz is fucking an awesome writer for the Daily Banter. And also Bob and Chaz Show. You can find it on iTunes.
Yep. And Stitcher.
You can find him, I think, naked on me later on, but I'm not for entirely certain. Let's just see how it goes. We love you, Bob. Chaz.
You called
him. Oh,
out.
My God. I yelled Bob's name out. I told him I was going to do that. I told Bob I was going to yell
that
his name
so
out.
That is so awesome.
Oh, my God. I'm so
honestly,
sorry.
You were fulfilling Bob's biggest fantasy right there. I promise
you. I just yelled Bob's name out. I love you, Chaz.
Thanks for coming, Chaz.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Happy fucking happy hour, everybody. Mm.